from the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
It's very moving. I mean, students are typically very impressed just by the sheer expanse to see 14,000 headstones, Latin crosses, and stars of David displayed on the side of a hill.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Dr. Tom Cotter, Professor Emeritus of History at Hillsdale College. He'll join us later on in the program on this Veterans Day week to take us on a tour of Meuse-Argonne American Cemetery. First on today's show, we're joined by Dr. Matthew Meehan, Director of Academic Programs and Assistant Professor of Government at Hillsdale in D.C. Dr. Meehan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Talking today about a piece that you co-wrote with Emily Weston Cannon, who's a research coordinator at Hillsdale in D.C., over at the American Spectator at spectator.org, citizen suits are the usual means to combat unusual justice, and this is concerning the recent Texas abortion law and lawsuits concerning it that have made its way up to the U.S. Supreme Court at this point. Arguments have been heard. Let's set the parameters and let's make sure people know what we're talking about. What is this Texas abortion law, and what is the what some are saying unusual enforcement means included here? What are we arguing about?
So the Texas Heartbeat Act, or SB 8, was passed and put into law, and what it states is, or the most unusual part of what it states is that citizens are allowed to essentially bring forward a citizen suit, claiming that, or, you know, citing an abortionist who is who's procured an abortion, or helped someone procure an abortion, rather, and bring it to court and actually sue in a civil suit and actually claim a bounty, like get a cash reward for having done so. So it's sort of, you know, in the kind of the Venn diagram related to sort of Good Samaritan law, right? You see something evil going on in your society and you bring it to law, but as a civil suit. And that is the sort of sticking point that's different than having the government agents of the executive branch of Texas government actually enforce it, the attorneys general.
I want to return to, of course, the specifics thereof in just a moment, but first, what is the question in front of the Supreme Court? This is not the Dobbs case, which is the one that people are discussing is a potential reversal of Roe and Casey previously. This is just a case about the Texas law and about the enforcement mechanisms. What are the questions, or what is the question that the Supreme Court is trying to answer?
Well, it seems that the question will focus on whether or not to grant the federal DOJ and parties suing to enjoin and stop this law from being possible at all. The hope is that the decision that comes down is one that says, no, there is no constitutional right to basically prior restraint. That you can't, there's no pre-enforcement review of something that hasn't actually been enacted. That is, no one has brought a civil suit, and the government of Texas has not done anything about it yet. It's complicated, and it's in one sense a sidebar to the Dobbs case, and I think that's the big show. But I think it's important and related to the Dobbs case in that the claim that's been made about this Texas heartbeat law is that it's, in a certain sense, an irrational law, an unusual and desperate law, and tries to throw the pro-life movement and pro-life justices who are protecting this law right now in sort of cast aspersions on it in order to weaken any decision that limits Roe v. Wade or overturns it in the other case.
Dr. Meehan, we're told, as you outline in this piece at the American Spectator, that this Texas law is unusual, that it is dangerous, unprecedented is another word used in conjunction with it. Is that so? Is this enforcement mechanism suits being able to be filed by private citizens, is that so unusual?
So it is unusual, and everyone's right to note that it's unusual, but the claim that I challenged that a lot of people on the right and center and left have been saying is that this is absolutely dangerous and terrible for the regime in some large way. In reality, citizen suit provisions are a fairly normal, unusual solution for unusual situations. Right? Meaning, it's the norm for strange cases. And it goes back all the way to the reign of Henry V. These kinds of laws have popped up again and again, particularly when there is a diffuse case that is hard to detect, and something wrong that's hard to detect. And the first cases were about dumping in waterways, sort of mm-hmm. people, you know, polluting with fish guts and hunter's offal, rivers and streams. And so it's had an environmental kind of history in a way.
Dr. Matthew Meehan with us, Director of Academic Programs and Assistant Professor of Government at Hillsdale in D.C. His piece is at the American Spectator. Clearly here, too, it's important to note that the Texas law prohibits these civil suits against the women seeking or the women undergoing an abortion. Who is eligible to be targeted then in these suits?
In essence, it's going after the abortionists, the abortion mills, the actual places that commit the or do the procedures. It's possible that it could be others who are funding it in some other way or support someone or pressure someone into it. But I think the sort of the intended target and the likely, you know, case that would come if it ever comes is an abortionist. And I think that's just the way that that good pro-life citizenship mm-hmm. has taken shape, is that a woman pregnant with a child under very difficult circumstances is, in a certain sense, not the target of justice, because while it's wrong to take that infant's life and participate in it, maximum justice sometimes becomes maximum injustice, as the old maxim goes.
One final question for Dr. Matthew Meehan. I read some critique from the right, more libertarian right, about the possibility of this similar enforcement mechanisms being used to attack Second Amendment rights across the country. Have you seen that critique? What do you think of it?
The short answer, and this is where you actually get into the substance of the law, right? The short answer is we have a very settled precedent and consensus about guns. We actually do. It's been since the founding and before, and it's been upheld without much challenge and with hot, like super majorities approval of the American people. This one, not so much. So substantively, this is the problem, and that's why the Clean Water Act, those civil suits there, and there's complexity there because there are also executive enforcements. And the civil suits there are almost to shame the government into moving. Mm-hmm. So they're slightly different, I recognize. But even there, there was less of a concern because basically everyone was like, yeah, clean water, everybody wants that, right? Private ownership of guns in order to keep a well-maintained militia, basically everybody wants that except for a few activists. The ability to kill babies in the womb, nobody wants that, right? Like, that's not something people want. You say, wait, but there's a hardcore, you know, now was perhaps an ignorant majority for a short time. Now there's, I'd say, a misguided and ignorant minority of the country that wants it. But it has always been a massively contested issue, and I do think the substance of these things justify it in some sense, whereas and keep things more peaceable on, like, for instance, the Clean Water Act, and so they're not abused in the same way, mm-hmm. managed, and then justify a certain kind of disruption, temporary disruption, when it's something like the abortion case.
Dr. Matthew Meehan, Director of Academic Programs and Assistant Professor of Government at Hillsdale in D.C. You can find his recent piece at the American Spectator, spectator.org. Dr. Meehan, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you, Scott.
Up next, we talk with Kevin Hassett, former Trump administration economic advisor. His new book is The Drift, Stopping America's Slide to Socialism. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Well, Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. To get in touch with Hillsdale College, if you're an alumnus, a friend of the college, or potential student, head to hillsdale.edu. We're joined now by Kevin Hassett, a distinguished visiting fellow at the Hoover Institution, managing director of the Lindsay Group. He also was chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors from 2017 to 2019 and a senior advisor to President Donald Trump. His brand new book is The Drift, Stopping America's Slide to Socialism. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you.
How would you differentiate President Trump's economic plan when he was in office to the plans of many of his predecessors, be it President Obama or even going back, you know, 8 years before that to two terms of President George W. Bush? How would you differentiate what President Trump, his goals and ambitions were compared with other presidents?
Well, I think that President Trump wanted to cut corporate taxes. He recognized, you know, as a businessman, that if you have a business-friendly environment, then that'll be really good for the economy. And that's something that, you know, President Bush cut marginal tax rates, but he was also a compassionate conservative who spent most of the tax cut money on things like the child credits that are really social policy. And so I think you'd have to go back to Reagan to find a Republican that was as supply side as Donald Trump. And I think it's, not a coincidence that Art Laffer was an advisor of Reagan and an advisor of Trump as well. You know, Art Laffer, the famous inventor of the Laffer curve. Mm-hmm. And so, on deregulation, he was much, much more aggressive than anyone's been in the past. I mean, previous Republican administrations actually added to regulation, but, you know, the chapter in my book, The Drift, where I go into this, you can see that Trump actually just, you know, cut the enormous thousands and thousands of pages. But then on trade policy, President Trump had a much different trade policy than traditional Republicans. You know, he's a tariff man, after all, and so he was much more confrontational, even with our allies, trying to get better trade deals for Americans.
Talking with Kevin Hassett, his brand new book is The Drift, Stopping America's Slide to Socialism. There's a really interesting chapter. They're all interesting, but especially interesting. The 3% promise, in which you walk through, the efforts to get President Trump's, tax cut bill, through the House and Senate and signed into law. Why was this argument so hard to make, even to get some Republicans on board with the tax cut plan?
Yeah, I think that the tax cut plan was well-designed. It targeted the tax rates that were the highest and hurting the economy the most. On the other hand, you know, the corporate tax code has historically been kind of a difficult thing for anyone politically to go after, because it looks like you're just cutting taxes for corporations. And of course, economic theory, which we went into a lot in the public debate at the time, shows that if you create a friendly environment for businesses, then you create a friendly environment for workers. You know, President Trump, out of all of our economic analysis from CEA, shows the, you know, average income for a worker will go up $4,000 talking point as his favorite during the tax cuts. But a lot of Republicans have been shy, as, you know, President Bush was, of corporate tax reductions, because it looks like you're just sort of giving money away to big business. Now, that's certainly, true that businesses' taxes go down as a first impulse, but the whole dynamic effect of business tax cuts is really visible right now in the data.
Kevin, I need to ask about some things that are more current and perhaps didn't make the deadline for the book, but of course, economic factors are always changing. We hear so much, and it's not just hearing, and that's, I think, the important thing. Americans are seeing with their own eyes these supply shortages, whether it be at the grocery store, whether it be shopping, you know, in advance for Christmas gifts. They are seeing and experiencing this with their own eyes. What's responsible, to what extent are Biden administration policies responsible for the supply chain issues that we're experiencing right now?
Oh, yeah, Biden is 100% responsible for this. And there's like a big picture and a little picture. The little picture is just that he's thrown, with their massive stimulus bill, an enormous amount of cash into people's pockets. That has driven up the demand for just about everything, to sky high levels. People have, lots and lots of cash on their hands because the government mailed them checks. At the same time, he's paying a lot of work, and proposing, you know, business tax hikes, which discourage business expansion to meet this higher demand. And so when you have high demand and you attack supply, you're basically first revealing that you don't understand economics. but second, you know, you're basically igniting inflation. And so what is it that we see? We see inflation, and we see empty shelves. But the empty shelves thing, I said that there's a big picture thing aspect to it, too, that when you become a socialist nation, and make no mistake about it, that there are very radical socialists that really have totalitarian bents that have taken over most of the universities that, you know, will beat up a conservative if they show up to talk. And these radical socialists want political power. They want the government to take over and control the means of production and tell you what you can buy and what you can't buy.
You bring up the I word, inflation, which, again, Americans are feeling in their pocketbooks. What should we think about how this will impact the next 6 months, the next year? Because we were told, of course, by the administration, A, it's not happening, and B, if it is happening, it's transitory, it'll be short term. And that doesn't appear to be the case at this point.
Yeah, inflation is taking off. And basically what we're about to do is enter a wage-price spiral. And so what happens is prices go up faster than wages, which is why you know, everybody's real incomes this year are declining. The way to think about that is, you know, after you leave the gas station, you go to the grocery store and you got a lot less money to spend on food. Right now, well, if you go to your boss and say, hey, dude, I need a higher wage. And, you know, the boss is selling things at higher prices, and so he can afford to give you a higher wage. But then when he lifts your wage, you have to lift prices again to compensate for that. And so then the prices go up by even more than you expected, and then next year, once again, your wage doesn't keep up with prices, and then next year you ask for a wage increase and you get it. This wage-price spiral is what led to double-digit inflation in the 70s, and I think that we're probably headed towards double-digit inflation in the Biden administration, especially if they pass their poorly named Build Back Better plan.
Kevin Hassett, The Drift is the book, Stopping America's Slide to Socialism. The last chapter is The Way Forward. We know we have a few more years of President Biden in the White House, but we also know midterms are coming up in 2022, and there's an opportunity for voters to make their voices heard, as they did recently in Virginia. Is it as simple, Kevin, as heading out to the polls in 2022 and making Americans' voices heard, or is there more that needs to be done to stop this drift, as you describe it?
Yeah, well, there's a heck of a lot more to be done than has been done. And the way I like to say it is that you can whine about socialism all you want, but until you study it and define it and identify the people who are behind it and think about what their strategies are and what they're trying to do, then you're not going to be able to stop it. And for me, the Virginia race is an interesting example because, you know, President Biden came in massive, massive stimulus. You know, the Build Back Better plan has the whole Green New Deal in it. There's lots of clearly socialist policies, like even they want to build millions of homes. And so Joe Biden wants to be your landlord, which is really classic socialism, right? So the government owns the buildings. And so they're doing all that. And again, Afghanistan, you know, was a complete debacle. They gave $85 billion worth of our military equipment to the enemy. Everything's going wrong. The price of oil, the price of gas is through the roof, and he shut down pipelines. It's hard to imagine a sequence of events that would be more negative for a party. And the fact that virtually every Democrat voted for Terry McAuliffe despite that is really chilling to me.
Kevin Hassett, former chairman of the President's Council of Economic Advisors. The new book is The Drift, Stopping America's Slide to Socialism. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you.
Up next, we talk with Tom Connor, Professor Emeritus of History at Hillsdale College, as he takes us on a tour of Meuse-Argonne American Cemetery. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Reading Garden of Lights is taking place November 19th through December 31st at Turtle Bay's McConnell Botanical Gardens by the Sundial Bridge, featuring over 1 million lights, plus holiday-themed food, drinks, music, and so much more. Presented by Mercy Medical Center Reading. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Take a stroll down Memory Lane at Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage. Whether you're looking for tools from the past, vintage clothing, collectibles, jewelry, or something that just reminds you of the good old days, you can find it at Memory Lane. Those special shabby chic and vintage style items are seen in every nook and cranny. So what are you waiting for? Sure, you can check out their Facebook page, but it's a lot more fun to explore the past and find your treasure. 1665 Pine Street in Reading. Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5 and 1460 AM.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance is now open at 3673 Eureka Way. Physical therapists Kevin Elo and Rachel Lang have a combined 29 years of experience in helping those who've suffered orthopedic injuries, strains, and sprains. Kevin has worked with the USA Gymnastics team, NFL Combine, and professional BMX riders. He's also helped members of Cirque du Soleil get back into action. Rachel works closely with seniors and is also a group fitness instructor and adept at returning people to an active lifestyle. Both Kevin and Rachel at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance are accepting new clients. Give them a call today, 530-533-5030. If you are in need of physical therapy, talk to the experts at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance at 3673 Eureka Way. Call 530-533-5030. That's 530-533-5030 today.
Redding Garden of Lights is taking place November 19th through December 31st at Turtle Bay's McConnell Botanical Gardens by the Sundial Bridge, featuring over 1 million lights, plus holiday-themed food, drinks, music, and so much more. Presented by Mercy Medical Center Redding. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. You can get an email every time there's a new episode of the program. Head to radiohour.hillsdale.edu and enter your email address, radiohour.hillsdale.edu. You can also find archived episodes of the program there, too. We're joined by Dr. Tom Connor, former professor of history at Hillsdale College, professor emeritus now, and also author of the book War and Remembrance, The Story of the American Battle Monuments Commission. Dr. Connor, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Scott.
Meuse-Argonne American Cemetery. Tell us where this is located and describe the layout of the cemetery, please.
Okay. The Meuse-Argonne Cemetery is in the little village of Romagne-sous-Montfaucon, which is a tiny village in the region that's known as the Meuse-Argonne. It's about 25 or 30 miles northwest of Verdun, which was the site of a tremendous battle during World War I, French against the Germans. The Americans weren't in the war yet because it was 1916. But it's rolling farmland. It's one of the most, not necessarily underdeveloped economic areas in France, but it's definitely one of the poorest. And I guess underdeveloped still applies because this area hosted not just what was for the United States the greatest battle of the American experience in World War I, but the Battle of Verdun also took place in this region 2 years earlier, and even though those battles were 100 years ago, the economy has really not come back completely. It never was a heavily industrialized area, and it's not particularly heavily populated, and given the climate, it's not really the most favorable area for farming, but it's some of the most beautiful farm countries. It's rolling hills, and of course the terrain always figures in battle. It certainly did in this battle. But of course the Argonne is a forest. The Meuse is a river that defined the east flank of the American advance, which was the hallmark of the battle, the advance north into previously German-held territory. The Argonne Forest defined the left flank of the advance. So you've got quite a mix, but it's when I've taken students there, they've often just marveled at how beautifully pastoral the terrain is.
Now, you mentioned the Meuse-Argonne offensive of World War I, how important that was. Tell us a little bit about that battle and why it was so important in World War I.
Well, it was important because it was the last battle, part of the final round of engagements that brought the First World War to a conclusion. The American attack in the Meuse-Argonne began on the 26th of September, 1918, and 47 days later was November 11th, and that's when the armistice, of course, went into effect at 11 o'clock in the morning. And during that 47-day stretch, the American Army had basically accomplished its mission, which was to advance north to the important rail junction of Sedan, that's S-E-D-A-N, which was the hub of the German rail supply system for the whole eastern part of the Western Front, if you will. But it also, this battle turned out to be the bloodiest battle in American history. There were over 120,000 casualties in that battle. John J. Pershing commanded it from start to finish, and it was considered a victory because the Americans had driven the Germans literally to ask for an armistice. Of course, this was also part of a very large operation along the entirety of the Western Front, because the British and French, of course, had been fighting there for years before we even arrived. And the Meuse-Argonne offensive was a coordinated attack with a British move farther north on the front against what was one of the most heavily defended areas of the front, the Hindenburg Line, depicted in the movie 1917. By the way, that was the more heavily fortified position to which the Germans had withdrawn in the spring of 1917.
Dr. Tom Connor with us. We talk about the Meuse-Argonne American Cemetery here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. The largest number of our military dead in Europe are here. Is that because of that battle? Is it because just logistically this is where it ended up? How did that come to be?
Yes to all of your surmises, Scott, absolutely. About half of the American dead from the Battle of the Meuse-Argonne rest in that cemetery. So 14,246 buried there, and there were about 26 to 28,000 dead. So it would stand to reason, I suppose, that the largest of our cemeteries in Europe would be on the bloodiest battlefield. And the American Battle Monuments Commission adopted from its origins the policy of situating the permanent cemeteries, whenever possible, anyway, on the field of battle. Mm-hmm. So this cemetery is right in the middle of the battlefield and the particular action that occurred on the ground that the cemetery now resides upon was in early October along the heights of Cunel. And the Americans took the ground. The battle went right through the area of the cemetery.
Is there a monument along with the cemetery here?
There is a monument at nearby Montfaucon. That's the French word. It's Falcon Mountain is how we Americans would understand it. But that was a very prominent hill that the American Army took on the second day of the battle, which is to say the 27th of September 1918. And there's a very tall column on it, about 175 feet high. And General Pershing, when he was conceiving or conceptualizing the distribution of monuments, cemeteries, and the design of the monuments, he took a very, very intimate role, played a very intimate role in all of that, micromanaged almost, we would say today. But he wanted that monument, the monument on the Meuse-Argonne battlefield, to be the most prominent of all the monuments, because it stood to reason in his mind, anyway, that the most impressive monument physically should stand upon the most important battlefield.
And there's also a fairly elaborate chapel at this location, too. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, it's the largest chapel of any of the World War I cemeteries. The United States maintains 8 permanent World War I cemeteries in France, Belgium, and England. 6 of them, 6 of the 8 are in France. And this chapel is the largest. It cost all of $650,000 to build. That was a very large amount of money back in the 20s when it was built. But it's Romanesque style. It's a very impressive structure. And it's got 2 porticos extending out from each of its 2 sides. And there are names of the missing are displayed there, so one can walk and read them. There's also a panel devoted to the dead who were killed in the Siberian intervention in Russia. That's particularly important to people in Michigan because a number of the soldiers who participated in that little-known expedition actually came from Michigan because they were used to a very severe winter climate.
Now, you've visited Meuse-Argonne. You've taken students to visit as well. How would you describe the experience?
It's very moving. I mean, students are typically very impressed just by the sheer expanse to see 14,000 headstones, Latin crosses and Stars of David displayed on the side of a hill, which is basically how the cemetery's laid out. And it's quite a sight.
Dr. Tom Connor, Professor Emeritus at Hillsdale College and author of War and Remembrance, the story of the American Battle Monuments Commission. Dr. Connor, thanks for joining us.
Great pleasure, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Up next, we talk with Jeffrey Rogers, Associate Dean of Men at Hillsdale College, about why we need more liberal arts students in the military. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
As part of Operation Holiday Salute, Reading Kia would like to take this moment to thank our veterans and those currently enlisted in the military for their service. Since 2006, Reading Kia has set out to be the premier automobile dealership in the North State. There's always a military incentive rebate on all new 2022 Kias at Reading Kia. Test drive the 2022 Kia Sorento today. Reading Kia, home of the 20-year, 200,000 limited-mile powertrain warranty. 418 East Cypress Avenue, ReadingKia.com.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
What's your Thanksgiving Day plan this year? Black Bear Diner will be open, and you've got options. Come in for a 3-course entree. Choose from turkey, ham, or prime rib. Or grab a Thanksgiving meal to go for an easy fix at home. If you're on the road, stop at one of our 145 diners for a fill-up along the way. Search for Black Bear Diner near me. Spend your Thanksgiving with Black Bear Diner. Open daily in Reading at 2605 Hilltop Drive.
Black Bear Diner.
Aloha, this is Kevin, Operations Manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price and after a few months realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We're joined now by Jeffrey Rogers, Associate Dean of Men at Hillsdale College. Jeffrey, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. We want to talk about a piece that you wrote for townhall.com. Why we need more liberal arts students in the military and supporting those who serve. This is an area in which you have some expertise, having spent 26 years in the Navy. Before we get to some of what you wrote, tell us just a little bit about your service.
Yeah, I joined the Navy straight out of high school. I come from a large family, 10 brothers, 4 sisters, or 5 sisters, and they were giving away free shirts, so I was like, how do you get one? He said, join the Navy. I was like, I'm all on board with that.
It's easier these days because they give you free shirts for filling out credit card applications. You know, it's just
Yeah, I got the free shirt, and I didn't know it was attached to it. It was 26 years of military service, but I've enjoyed my time that I served. So,
you wrote for Town Hall about needing more liberal arts students in the military, and the argument that liberal arts education, which of course we feature here at Hillsdale, is a perfect path to military service. Why do you say that?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that all of our military academies are liberal arts colleges, so it would make sense that a liberal arts education would be conducive for military service. I mean, even in the current conflicts we're facing right now, as eyes are turned toward Iran, we need people who can think well, reason these things out, and a liberal arts education is excellent in doing it, and particularly here at Hillsdale College. I mean, Aristotle taught that, he said that a citizen is capable of both ruling and being ruled through active participation and deliberation and discussion making, and that's what our students get here.
Go a little deeper into that. You know, we have a core curriculum here. There are things that every Hillsdale student, no matter what their major, no matter what their minor is, they're going to learn no matter what.
Correct.
How do those particular things help to lead that path or make that transition to military service be a successful one?
Yeah, so because of the core curriculum here, we're not necessarily concerned at Hillsdale College in what a student's going to major in. What we're more concerned about is what type of man they will become or woman. We're concerned about the soul, the person, and the self-governance of that person. And that by far is more important than those other little things, i.e. majoring in just this. It prepares them to live a life well.
During your service in the Navy, did you have any particular experiences with people you serve with who came from that liberal arts background that sort of made you consider this topic?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I've worked with leaders who have called me in their office and been able to articulate and explain to me the reason behind why we were doing. I mean, I raised my right hand to defend the Constitution of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic, but I didn't know what that meant. I had a high school education. I eventually went to George Washington University, got my degree, but prior to that, I didn't know what those things meant. But I worked for some people who knew what those meant, knew what freedom meant, what it meant to secure it, the blessings of those liberties, and that opened my eyes up.
How many students from Hillsdale over the years that you've been here, which I think is eight years,
yes.
How many have gone on to serve?
So in my 8 years that I've been here, we've had about, and this is an estimate, about 50 students have went on. And I'm talking about medical school.
Mm-hmm.
So we have through the Health Professional Scholarship Program, students who do the Platoon Officer Candidate Program through the United States Marine Corps, students that way. We also have students who are Green Beret, Special Forces, in the Army. And we have students who are Navy pilots, students who are submariners, who are on the submarines with nuclear capabilities. So we have them in all facets of the military and the Coast Guard as well.
I would imagine during their time here, you talk with many of them who are preparing for this. What do you talk with them about? What do you discuss with them as they prepare for this?
Yeah, so one of the first questions I want to know from a student is, why do you want to serve? So I think it's important to know why you want to do these things. And it's sort of the question we asked at Hillsdale, why? It's asked a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we deliberate over that why and come to some consensus of why you want to do these things. So I asked them just point blank, why do you want to serve? And I find some of them are, you know, they have family members who've served. They have been taking the U.S. Constitution and talking about the freedoms that we have here, and they want to help protect those. So those are really good conversations.
Jeffrey Roger is with us. He is the Associate Dean of Men at Hillsdale College, and a piece at townhall.com that you can find, Why We Need More Liberal Arts Students in the Military and Supporting Those Who Serve. In the piece, you write that students here at Hillsdale, liberal arts students, understand not only what is at stake, but also the duty of citizens. What are the duties of citizens?
Yeah, the duty of citizens. So sharing in the rights and responsibilities of self-government is the duty of every citizen. Now, every citizen doesn't know that, but I contend in the article that students, such as students at Hillsdale College, do understand that. The framers, I could quote you, Benjamin Franklin wrote, only virtuous people are capable of freedom. And as nations become more corrupt and vicious, they have more need of masters, as he said. And so Hillsdale, through students studying, not only they look at the source documents, the Federalist Papers, and those discussions that were made and deliberated over this country, they have a better idea of what it means to be a citizen in those duties.
The second half of the title of the piece is supporting those who serve. Those of us, me included, who have not served, how do we help in our own way? How do we support those who are doing this work?
Yeah, so the best way that the regular citizen who is not in the military can support is by being a good citizen, by knowing the issues and voting on those issues, by when you see a military service member, just saying thank you for your service. Those go a long way. By holding our government accountable and responsible as citizens, and making sure that when we conflicts that are arising in our military goes into that, we are aware of the issues and are being a part of a solution and not part of the problem.
Final question for Jeffrey Rogers, his piece at townhall.com, Why We Need More Liberal Arts Students in the Military. Years ago, virtually everyone, I would say, had someone in their family who had served in the military, and going back through World War II, Korea, Vietnam. And these days, it feels to me that there are fewer and fewer who have that direct connection, the direct family connection to someone who has served in the military. Do you find that, is that problematic? Is that something we have to figure out how to better connect citizens to the military and the work they're doing?
Yeah, good point. Yeah, I see that more and more, that the you know, even the students who I've talked with who want to serve, they have no one in their family has served. Our World War II generation is unfortunately, we're losing rapidly. You know, there was only so many that served in Vietnam and Korea. And so, yeah, that connection.
Jeffrey Rogers, he is Associate Dean of Men at Hillsdale College, 26 years in the U.S. Navy previous to that, and his piece at townhall.com that you can read, Why We Need More Liberal Arts Students in the Military and Supporting Those Who Serve. Jeffrey, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Matt Meehan from Hillsdale in D.C., discussing the enforcement mechanism from the Texas abortion law. Kevin Hassett discussed his new book, The Drift. Tom Connor, Professor Emeritus of History at Hillsdale, took us on a tour of Meuse Argonne American Cemetery. And Jeffrey Rogers from Hillsdale telling us why more liberal arts students are needed in the military. You can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews, including Kevin Hassett this week, or listen anytime to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour podcast. Find it at SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or Amazon Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Hillsdale Radio or find us on Facebook. Email us at radiohour@hillsdale.edu. The assistant producer of the show is Nate Esbenshade. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com. Join Sue McClain weekday mornings from 6 to 7 for the Sue McClain News Hour, where you'll hear the up-to-the-minute local news, national and international news, weather, sports, and a whole lot more. Followed by Free Fire Radio from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. with Carl and Linda Bott. From 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, equal opportunity critics. From noon to 3, learn how to get out of debt with Dave Ramsey. From 3 to 6, don't miss constitutional expert Mark Levin. Monday through Thursday night, starting at 6 p.m., we have local shows featuring everything from the paranormal, local history, North State Now, and unsung heroes of our area. From 7 to 9, tune in to Ben Shapiro, your local downtown radio station, KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com.
It's a bright new day. The sun is shining, the birds are singing, and there's never been a better day to try Mount Shasta spring water. Hi, I'm Bob the Drop. I come from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta. I'm bottled at the source. It doesn't get more cool and refreshing than that, and it's delivered right to your door. Yep, pure and simple, naturally the best. Start your bright new day by calling 1-800-922-6227 to order some of the best tasting water on the planet, Mount Shasta spring water.
North Valley Distributing at 3081 Crossroads Drive in Reading is part of Operation Holiday Salute, honoring our veterans and the men and women who are currently on active duty for their courage, bravery, and sacrifice. North Valley Distributing at 530-222-1500 wants to thank the brave men and women who have taken an oath and have proudly served or are currently serving our country and the American people. North Valley Distributing, part of Operation Holiday Salute on KCNR.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Where do you go in Shasta County to get advice on the best type of firearm to meet your needs and how to safely carry and use it? The answer is to join the revolution at locally owned Bastiani Arms. Bastiani Arms believes in a better way to serve their customers and providing them with all the information needed to make the right decisions before and after the sale. They have a large selection of guns and ammunition and always special discounts for veterans. Self-protection is your right. Join the revolution at Bastiani Arms, 2539 Larkspur Lane in Reading, 222-8222.
Tobacco and Brew, located at 2143 Hilltop Drive, has been an integral part of our community for over 40 years. They have supported the veterans, law enforcement, fire and disaster survivors throughout this whole time. Tobacco and Brew has expanded their walk-in humidor and brought to the North State new lines of fine cigars, pipes, and tobacco products. Additionally, they are offering a pipe bar to try out new tobacco for taste and aroma. Tobacco and Brew is your one-stop shop for any tobacco product and accessories to include lighters, humidors, pouches, and more. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
Magic happens between the notes.
Linda Bott.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And joining us today is Linda Bott. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, guys. So we wanted to give you, our listeners, an idea of what it's like to be on stage, to be performing in front of a bunch of different people. So I dragged Linda Bott in because she's done this since you were a kid, right?
Yes. I professionally started working at 15.
Wow.
So I could say that's when I first started getting paid. But I have been singing, you know, basically growing up in the country where you've got horses and trees and the creativity of what it is to have imaginary friends and audiences. And, you know, I was the most famous person living in the country.
Yeah. Wow.
So, tell us about how you got your start. What exactly is it that you do?
I was basically just naturally, I think, gifted in the fact that I have a good ear. And that my parents belonged to Capitol Records. And one of the albums was Barbra Streisand. My brother to this day can't stand listening to anything Barbra Streisand because I emulated every single intonation and tone and breath. And so she basically was my voice teacher. And I learned how to hold my breath and have these big tones. And so that's what I do, is I sing. And then down the road, you know, that meant jingles, that meant recording, that meant, okay, do you want to be in this show? You have to learn these lines. Okay, can you dance? So I kind of did the acting, singing, and dancing, and did some stage plays and was in a couple theatrical productions in high school and doing stuff like that.
I think the first time I met you was on the local stage here. I was working behind the scenes and helping get set pieces up and on. And it was a Christmas show.
Are you talking Martinis with Santa?
Yes.
I wrote that show.
Nice.
And produced that show. So that was a really big undertaking for me because I had written a song with one of my Nashville buddies named Cam King, and we wrote the song Martinis with Santa. And I thought, okay, now what am I going to do with this song? I recorded it a few times in different albums that I have produced and actually released. Besides trying to fill the seats, making sure the seats were filled, it was just a glorious experience.
So you are a stage performer, you are a singer. A lot of people have a very specific image in mind when they think of someone who's a performing artist. They think about actors, actresses, the glamour, the flashing cameras. They think about Broadway and all of the
jazz hands?
Jazz hands.
Literal jazz hands.
I don't know. So that's interesting because I think we all see the world through our own personal lens. Mm-hmm. So I would say that, first of all, it's a craft. There's a lot of grunt work involved in what it is. People just think you just roll out of bed and you have no idea the grunt work that goes into performing and what it is to, it's a lot of energy to put on high heels and put on clothes. And when you're hungry, you'll take any job. I used to say to my agent, just give me the Ramada Inn, I'll take a piano bar for $30. And that's the truth.
So if you could embed an idea into our audience's mind of what you do, what would it be?
I connect with people. I try to please people. It's an energy for me to feed people, but it also feeds me. So I feel like when I feed them, they feed me. It's a cycle. It's an energy circle.
What kind of mindset do you need to have to do what you do?
Well, I would say a lot of entertainers are very insecure. They need to have the acknowledgement, but ultimately the redemption. There's like a, oh, yeah, you think because I'm tall and I'm blonde, I can't belt out a note, I don't have a brain. That has always been great for me to go, like, as soon as you open your mouth, people are like, what? So what does it take? It takes a lot of chutzpah. It takes a lot of going through doors when people say, no, you can't do that. Well, watch me. You know, again, I heard another interview recently of Kelly Clarkson that said, you tell me no, and I'm going to show you how good I can do it. You know, you have to believe in yourself because there's constant people who are going to tear you down and say things or, you know, you may be thinking you're saying the word pink and somebody says, look at how she says the word pink. I mean, that's such a weird analogy, but it's true. Does that make sense? So you have to develop thick skin because you're told 9 no's for 1 yes, no matter how good you are.
So think of your very first live performance to your very last live performance. What is
the news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.